Blog Talk Radio.
Fluoride and the pineal gland. Up until the 1990s, no research had ever been conducted to determine the impact of fluoride on the pineal gland, a small gland located between the two hemispheres of the brain that regulates the production of the hormone melatonin. Melatonin is a hormone that helps regulate the onset of puberty and helps protect the body from cell damage caused by free radicals. It is now known, thanks to the meticulous research of Dr. Jennifer Luke from the University of Surrey in England, that the pineal gland is the primary target of fluoride accumulation within the body. The soft tissue of the adult pineal gland contains more fluoride than any other soft tissue in the body, a level of fluoride capable of inhibiting enzymes, about 300 parts per million. The pineal gland also contains hard tissue, hydroxyapatite crystals, and this hard tissue accumulates up to 21,000 parts per million, which is more fluoride than any other hard tissue in the body, e.g. teeth and bone. After finding that the pineal gland is the major target for fluoride accumulation in humans, Dr. Luke conducted animal experiments to determine if the accumulated fluoride could impact the functioning of the gland, particularly the gland's regulation of melatonin. Luke summarized her human and animal findings as follows. In conclusion, the human pineal gland contains the highest concentration of fluoride in the body. Fluoride is associated with depressed pineal melatonin synthesis by prepubertal gerbils and an accelerated onset of sexual maturation in female gerbils. The result strengthens the hypothesis that the pineal has a role in the timing of the onset of puberty. Whether or not fluoride interferes with the pineal function in humans requires further investigation. In a more recent study titled Fluoride Deposition in the Aged Human Pineal Gland, the study concludes this way. In conclusion, this study presented evidence that the fluoride readily accumulates in the aged pineal. Fluoride may also accumulate in the child's pineal because significant amounts of calcification have been demonstrated in the pineals from young children. In fact, calcification of the developing enamel organs and the pineal gland occur concurrently. If fluoride does accumulate in the child's pineal, the pineolocytes will be exposed to a relatively high local concentration of fluoride. Fluoride has been associated with many other health problems, including allergies, arthritis, bone disease, cancer, dental fluorosis, gastrointestinal issues, immune system problems, kidney problems, respiratory and reproductive problems, thyroid gland issues, and tooth decay. To learn more about it, go to fluoridealert.org or fluorideaction.com. There are a number of ways to reduce or even eliminate fluoride from your water supplies. The first would be activism. Write a letter to your congressman, or to your mayor, or to your governor, or to your local municipal water supplier, and tell them that you oppose water fluoridation. Unfortunately, there are only a few methods for filtering out fluoride from our water supplies. One is reverse osmosis. Fluoride and the pineal gland. Up.
I tried to. Hey, Ty.
Yay.
Hello. Welcome to Anarchy Girls. We have Macy Tomlin. And Macy, are you there?
I am there.
Okay, here we go. All right. Sorry, I pushed the wrong ad button. I'm so high in here. So sorry.
Nice.
So we have Ty on here, and we have Macy Tomlin, and Macy's going to go through and tell us what she's been doing, the type of activities and what her future holds and all this good stuff. And here we go. So tell us, Macy, about your journey.
I guess it started when I was 20 years old. I experimented with psychedelics for the first time, and I ended up microdosing on mushrooms for 3 months every day, and I gained a lot of knowledge about myself. A lot of life lessons came out of my journey with mushrooms, and from that point, I started to evolve more in my mind, expanding my mind, and I started to move up to other psychedelics like acid and then DMT. And then eventually I worked my way up within 5 years to ayahuasca. And I've estimated that I've tripped on different psychedelics about 250 times in the last 6 years. So I've had a lot of practice with them, and the most life altering, mind altering substance that I've come across is ayahuasca, and I got to experience an ayahuasca ceremony in February, and since that point I'm so passionate about ayahuasca that I'm actually going to be opening a retreat. But before I do that, I want to do it right. And so I'm going to Peru, and I'm going to be training under a shaman to become a shaman myself, which takes a very long time because, you know, a shaman isn't just somebody who gains knowledge within a period of like a year and then calls himself a shaman. It is a lifelong journey to become a shaman. And So I'm starting that practice next year. I'm going to be heading to Peru for a few months. And then within, I'm hoping 5 to 10 years, I want to open my retreat. But the shamanic practice is what I'm focusing on right now.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
All right, totally cool. Ty did a little study in that, didn't you, Ty?
I'm sorry.
Oh, and,
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you said.
Oh, no, Ty, I know, knows a little bit about certain things of like the, you know, shamanic type practices. So cool.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to just sit back, chill, and take some ayahuasca myself, which is going to be an absolute awesome.
Yeah, it's absolutely healing. You do have to be emotionally and spiritually prepared. Because the thing that ayahuasca does, and Ty, I don't know if you have you experienced an ayahuasca ceremony before?
Ayahuasca. No, I have not experienced an ayahuasca ceremony. Just all I did is basically just mushrooms.
Okay.
And LSD.
I mean, I definitely recommend that, you know, you take the steps, you don't just jump into ayahuasca, because ayahuasca is on a completely different dimension than any other psychedelic that I've taken. And it is so life-altering, so mind-altering, because you see a reality that you didn't know existed before. There's a complete difference between human consciousness and uniconsciousness. And from my experience, I was able to disassemble my brain and realize what was reality and what was not, and what reality was all of a sudden completely shattered what I knew about life. And after the ceremony was only the beginning of my journey on ayahuasca. Ayahuasca will completely tear down the walls of your reality. So and sometimes she'll burn the entire house down. And so I've actually been going through this year of having everything that I know just in shambles so I can rebuild up and build it better. But ayahuasca, you definitely have to be mentally, spiritually, and emotionally prepared. And one of the things that I want to incorporate in my retreat is I wasn't able to get a hold of my shaman after the ceremony. So when I was going through these extremely almost humiliating, painful lessons, to the point where, you know, I thought I wasn't going to make it out alive. I didn't have anybody to talk to. So what I want to incorporate in my retreat is to be able to call the person, whoever comes through my retreat 2 weeks after, and ask, you know, hey, how are you doing? What are you feeling right now? And talk them through this process, because I've gone through it. I know how challenging it can be to have everything that you know be shattered in front of you. And so that's something I'm really empathetic with it. So I really want people to be able to understand what they're going through after the ceremony.
Aha, uh-huh, that sounds really good, actually. That's kind of like you know, basically like a doctor getting personal with their patient.
You definitely have to have a spiritual connection before you walk into it. I mean, I saw some very crazy things in there. So
if I get into ayahuasca, I wouldn't do it without like a medicine man or a shaman.
Exactly. And you know what, there are people out there who say, you know what, shamanism isn't important. You can be your own shaman. You can do ayahuasca in the comfort of your own home. I personally, and this is just my views, because I respect the medicine to on such a spiritual and emotional level, this medicine, it is medicine. It is a plant that needs to be respected, and you have to have the spiritual and emotional and mental knowledge as a shaman to be able to guide these people, whoever comes to get healed, to guide these people through their journey during and after, I believe. I don't think that we should leave, you know, anybody on their own to deal with what happens after ayahuasca. And also I think that you need to know, you know, you need to research ayahuasca before you go in it. But, you know, there are people out there who pretend to be shamans, but they're not. And unfortunately, I believe that bad things can come from that. So you definitely need to know who you're going into a ceremony with, which is why I want to be a respectable source for people to come to Mexico and know that they have, you know, they can trust me, and they know that they're in a comfortable place in a setting where nothing bad is going to happen to them, and have that love and support afterwards as well.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's I think is crucial for sure. Also, I even tell other people when they bring up ayahuasca or certain things, I always even suggest that they should go start with a roadman or a shaman, like some kind of teacher, some kind of guide, you know, because people can go on certain trips and these guys can help them out a little bit. Even I mean, like even certain things like what people will call bad trips, right? And they need guidance with that. I mean, they're all good. That's all good. It's all medicine, and they have to understand what, I guess, what they're processing. And I think that's why it's important to have a teacher, right?
and you know what? My shaman was so good. He knew exactly what to do. He had been trained for years. I actually just got a little bit of information about his life. He was struck by lightning when he was a baby and survived. So they always looked at him as a shaman. And so he was my shaman, and he knew how to he was shaking banana leaves, and he knew how to shake those banana leaves at the right time when I was going, like, really deep into my journey. So I think it is really important to have the shaman there, because they are the healers, and they know what to do at the right exact moment that, you know, that it needs to be done. So they really are your guide through the ceremony. They are your guide. They're your babysitter. They're your comfort. They're everything, and they know the plant. They respect the plant.
Aha! Yeah, wow, that's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting to hear that. Yeah, who is your shaman? Like, what tradition is it? Like, what is it? A certain from a certain tribe, or I guess.
I'm not sure. I did. It was in Mexico, and I'm pretty positive that he is based in Mexico. And I know there are some places that you can do ayahuasca ceremonies in Mexico. There's one that I'm planning on going to in January for a week. They're from Peru, and they've just moved up to Mexico because it's, you know, Mexico and Peru. Obviously, it's easier to administer this medicine when you're not living in the United States, because obviously it's illegal here because it's so mind expanding and our government is afraid of it. So.
Wow. So they would even work, you can work with this medicine in Mexico. A lot easier.
Oh yeah.
I guess, huh?
Mexico does not care. Mexico is, I just went to Mexico about 2 weeks ago, a week ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I realized when I came back to the United States how less free I was. Mexico is much more free than we think. In fact, I believe that Mexico is the land of the free, and the U.S. is the home of the enslaved. But that might be my own opinion, but I don't think so. You know, you can administer these drugs. You know, obviously they're still illegal in Mexico, but at the same time, they have bigger things to worry about. I think, you know, the war between the cartels and the government is much more important to them than stopping these little retreats in Mexico. They don't care.
Right. And then plus they're probably trying to focus their resources in certain areas because it is kind of Mexico. I was in India, and in certain spots in India, ganja is illegal. all the sadhus, like the yogis and stuff like that, they still smoke ganja, and they actually leave them alone. Like, they'll smoke right in front of everybody. And
oh,
so,
wow.
Kind of the same thing over there. It's like, oh, it's illegal, but nobody really cares, not even the cops. It's like, wow. And that's an
English. That's like Jamaica. You go to Jamaica, it's apparently illegal, but they're on the side of the road selling you like tons of butts.
Yeah. It's really interesting. So that's how I'm picturing Mexico. Like, they don't really want to mess with that. And also, like, I guess poorer countries, they rather focus their resources on bigger things, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the police and the government has way too much time on their hands. You know, they're fighting the drug war. That needs to be ended. And honestly, I've realized that these drugs, and I'm not talking about crystal meth or heroin or crack cocaine. If you want to put those in your body, go ahead. But I know, and I was just talking to a very good friend of mine about how those kinds of dangerous drugs kill your soul. I'm out to advocate the use of psychedelics, the drugs, the quote unquote drugs that help you treat your mind, that are actual therapy that can decrease your anxiety, decrease your depression, get you off of opiates, heroin, stop your addictions. And those are the ones that are on, you know, the Schedule One list of narcotics. So, you know, we're working, I think that we are doing a really good job at working towards a better future where we, we speak out about these drugs. Actually, I just found out that 1/3 of the United States has taken some sort of form of psychedelic in the past. So we are waking up, and we are realizing that, you know, these so-called drugs are not as bad as everybody has made them out to be due to propaganda.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Wow, yeah. Huh? Oh, yeah, it's really interesting. Kratom, Kratom. Huh?
What was that? No, the Creighton? No, not doesn't that stop help people get off of opiates?
Yeah.
Kratom is an Indonesian tea leaf, and it has so many benefits. It stops people's pain. It actually is equivalent to opiates, the opiates that can really harm an individual. It's like that because it gets rid of the pain, but it has no negative effects like getting hooked or addicted to it. It gets people off of heroin and opiates. It increases your mood. It makes you want to work. It helps with depression. So it's got a lot of good benefits. And honestly, I use Kratom every day. And it was going to be put on the list of Schedule One list of narcotics. So many people reached out in a public outcry. The DEA has actually pushed the ban back to December. Now, the only issue with this is that they are going to be doing testing because they say it needs more testing. Well, they're going to do this through the FDA. So they're taking one branch of the government and they're moving it to another branch. So the risk about that is that more than likely it will become illegal because they will lie their way through and say that it's bad and it kills people. But really, it's just a competition with the opiates, and that's the reason why they want it illegal.
Right. That's what I think it is, too. It's a competition. And also they're trying to take more control of it so it becomes easier to kind of monopolize on it for a few people,
Mm-hmm.
And like basically taking Kratom and probably synthesizing it, you know, to heal people from opiates. And that way, I guess, the natural form is not there, and that makes, and it helps them to make all the big money on the whatever drug they'll make. That's how they're trying to do things, you know. I just thought of Kratom. The reason why I thought of Kratom, because you mentioned Schedule One drugs, you know.
I advocate the use of a lot of different natural substances that help the human function better, I guess is a good way to put it. God forbid we actually heal ourselves because that's what the government doesn't want. You know, with,
right.
with MDMA. Yeah, with MDMA, they originally made MDMA in the 60s to help with opening up to your spouse. It was for a couple therapy drug. And then by the 1970s or, you know, a few years later, they had discovered that it helps decrease the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder by 90% with two hits of MDMA. And when you compare that to a lifetime of Prozac, you can understand why these drugs are illegal. You know, and they make them out to be the propaganda that they're going to eat your brain away. That's not true. I just did MDMA 2 weeks ago, and it was one of the most therapeutic sessions that I've ever had with MDMA. I was able to forgive, and you know, my heart felt light. And since then, I've been really living up to what I learned in that MDMA experience. But I believe that MDMA is a huge therapy tool.
MDMA is
interesting.
Now, how would you describe MDMA to be like? So I would describe MDMA as, I don't know if there's a heaven after life. I don't know that. I'm not guaranteed that. And I'm definitely not promised that. But I do know that I've experienced heaven on earth through the use of MDMA. Exactly how heaven has been explained to me, that's how I feel on MDMA. I can look at somebody and just without judgment, without ego, look at them and be like, wow, you're a beautiful human being. Forgive myself for the things that I've done and not judge myself for the things that I've done. Like, you know, people who have a conscience, you know, we feel guilty and whatnot. And I feel like MDMA kind of pushes that aside so you can actually observe, you know, things that you've done in the past that you might not be proud of, or maybe it's a trauma that you can look at without that judgment or that harsh judgment or the sad feelings that come with it, because you're just happy in that moment. So you're able to look at those things without judgment, and you come out better because of it. It's all out love. It's honestly, if that's what love feels, it's love to me. It's absolute, pure, divine love. And that's how I feel on MDMA.
Yes, it's MDMA. Is that like also like, I think a certain chemical that we naturally make also in our bodies too?
You know what? I can't speak on that for sure because I don't know the facts on that.
I'm not
I just
sure
know.
Either.
I wish I could answer, but maybe one day I'll be able to. In fact, I probably will after I look it up tonight. So.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up too real quick. Because what I hear is like it's a chemical that makes you feel like happy.
It's serotonin. It's serotonin.
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, I know. It releases serotonin. So, you know, and that's where you actually have to be careful with MDMA because you don't want to take too much. So the proper ways to do it is to take magnesium before you roll, as it's called. And so that will release the tension in your neck and your jaw. So take magnesium before you ever go, if you ever take MDMA, take magnesium beforehand. And then the next day, because you've probably depleted a lot of your serotonin, the night after you take Molly or MDMA or whatever else it's called, ecstasy, take 5-HTP, and it will help increase that level of serotonin again.
What is it called again?
5-HTP. You can get it at any vitamin shop. It helps with your serotonin levels. But you do not take it until the next night because you can increase your serotonin levels, and therefore you can get serotonin syndrome, and that's very dangerous.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good to know,
actually. Wow. What happens when you do that?
Probably
some
serotonin toxic.
Yeah. is it too toxic for the person once it reaches those levels?
So let me give you an example. About 2.5 months ago, no, maybe 3 months ago, I was in a really, really bad state mentally, and I took way too much MDMA. In fact, I took MDMA for about 3 days in a row. And on top of that, I didn't know not to take 5-HTP during this time, so I was increasing my serotonin levels while I was on Molly. And I ended up with a with a really, really, really bad depression for about a week afterwards, I would say, and it even might have lasted later. And I'm lucky that I didn't get serotonin syndrome because that can ultimately and essentially end in death. So
yeah, wow.
I was lucky, but I learned the hard way. And so yeah. I definitely, you know, I'm sharing my mistakes because I don't want anybody taking a crap ton of MDMA to fix their, you know, their mental states and then end up worse in the end.
Right.
Because I made that mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually really good to know. So actually just one day to take, and it's good to have a good experience, like a one-day experience.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to push it past that level, though. You know, and I've learned this, too. I've learned my boundaries. When I took MDMA a couple weeks ago, I felt like I was going down. You know, I was starting to end my role, and I was like, I want to take another one. And I did, but because I had kind of burned out my serotonin levels, I was still really high but didn't have any more serotonin to give out. So I had to go and do some deep introspection afterwards. So always know your body's limit. I always just take one. You know, I'm still learning this, but just know your boundaries because, you know, you can end up, you know, ruining your night by taking more. Or you could end up having a really fun time. I mean, just know your own boundaries. Taking more Molly isn't going to hurt you. I mean, I think the most Molly that I've ever taken was when I was 19 and I was really stupid. And I took about 6 pills. And that was obviously not a smart move, but I didn't die, obviously. I just had a really bad day afterwards. So.
Right. Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah, I've taken MDMA just only once in my life, and it felt really freaking good. Like, I felt extra friendly. It was really weird. I really liked the hugs from people. I'm all like, what's going on with me, you know?
Yeah, you want to be touched, you know? Touch is essential when you're on Molly. It gets people to open up. And that's wonderful because I think in the Western culture, we have been taught to not be affectionate. For instance, I just went to Mexico and I got super, you know, I'm always about human connection now. Like that's my like main goal in life is to form these human connections because we're going to die eventually. And what else? Yeah. Everything else is going to go back in the box. But human connections are something that I think are valuable. So I got really used to the customs down there, kissing people on the cheek. And when I came back to the United States, I started kissing people on the cheek, and they were really like put, you know, they're put off by it. And to me, that shows like, you know, the United States has, you know, our culture hasn't really been taught how to be affectionate, and we're afraid of it, and we've closed our hearts down in various ways. And I think that Molly would be, you know, if everybody in the U.S. got Molly, you know, had Molly in the same day, we would be much more affectionate to each other.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think we would. Pretty much. Yeah, because I felt really, it was really interesting. It's not like I wasn't hallucinating or anything. It's just a very euphoric feeling, and it was like a very happy, loving, and I wanted a hug. I loved the hugs, and it was really interesting, you know. And it was a really pure MDMA, too, that I had. It was like, just this white, it was a powder in the capsule. It's like, really interesting.
Yep, there are different forms of Molly. And you definitely want to try to get the clean form. MDMA, its most natural form is, it's dark, it's not dark brown, it's like brown sugar. So it looks like brown sugar, and that's what you're looking for. That's kind of how you know that it's real. It's real. It's not cut with something else. A lot of MDMA is cut with methamphetamines or something very close to that, which is why like ecstasy has been cut with other things, which makes you want to dance. For me, MDMA makes me kind of want to chill more and just like, you know, rub people's hands and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I was chilling. I was It was interesting. We were cruising around in the limo. It was a friend's birthday, and I had some, and it was really interesting. And it was it was pretty, very chill, and we were just cruising all over the place in a limo. It was pretty fun, and went on the pier, and it was really good. Good experience.
Yeah, I mean, It has an incredible benefit. Like I said, you know, every single one of these drugs needs to be respected. I have had to learn this over the years. You know, I've made mistakes with that. But it definitely needs to be respected if you're going to take it, because it can give you so much in return. So definitely respect the drug. Don't take more than you need. And just have a good time with it. You know, let it roll, like literally roll with it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. That's interesting. You're right about the whole when you brought that up, the whole culture thing here is kind of true, because I grew up in a Cuban family, and Cubans are very, like, affectionate, and we kind of do that too. We give each other kisses on the cheek. Sometimes we don't, but it's, like, affectionate hugs. And you kind of see that here, like, here in America, like, the culture here is, like, kind of like it's not as affectionate, I guess. There's still some affection there, but it's not as much. And I can see that from my own personal perspective, how I grew up, you know.
absolutely.
So you had that experience in Mexico and kind of brought the habit here a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I really, really enjoy just the culture of Mexico in general. I just think it's a beautiful culture. I really, really love the people down there, and I'm actually moving there in January. So.
Oh wow.
I'm getting all set up. I'm getting ready to start my journey with ayahuasca, and I'm getting out of this country.
Oh wow! So you're like moving there. You're staying there to live. That's what you're saying, huh? On January?
Yes. I found a place, and I have a beautiful community down there. Beautiful anarchy community, and I love the women down there. Are just, you know, they're the kind of women that have found their divine feminine power, and we all, you know, we all are loving of each other, and you know, there's no competition. There's only love among us, and then we have the beautiful men of the community down there that are so empathetic and so into freedom, and they're so into freedom that they move to the freer country, and I want to be a part of that. Because I have big goals, and I cannot pursue them in the United States.
Oh, wow. Yeah, especially if you want to do the shamanism, probably is best in Mexico to work with that medicine. Wow.
Yeah, there's
so
absolutely
what
idea. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what part of Mexico you're moving to? I don't know if I missed that.
I'm moving to Acapulco.
Acapulco.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yep, yeah, I see. Yeah, and there's an anarchist community there. Yeah.
Yes. I'm so excited. When I went to Anarchapoco last year, I fell in love, and I love how humid it is. I feel alive in Acapoco. I feel like if it's not my permanent home, it's where I belong right now.
Yeah. Wow. Nice. I gotta go visit. Dude, I gotta go.
Oh, please
yeah,
do.
You,
please
you
do.
Can you check it? This year.
Huh?
Cool.
Yeah. I'm super stoked for it this year. It's supposed to be really, 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 really good this year.
Oh yeah, the Anarchapoco. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
My plan is to be there. I hope I'll be there. My plan is to be there this year in Anarchapoco.
I will be speaking, and I'm pretty sure Lauren will be as well at Anarchapoco. So I'm really looking for. I spoke last year on the therapeutic properties of psychedelics. I'm going to go down the same road this time, but I'm planning on being a little bit more accurate, and I'm going to be focusing more on ayahuasca.
Nice. Yeah, it's good to have, like, a focal point. So now your journey is focused on ayahuasca. You did all, you had your experiences, and you did different things, had different journeys, but now you're really... You want to make it more of a focus, this ayahuasca and shamanism journey now, right?
Yes. Yeah. And the reason why is because, you know, every single psychedelic that I've done has its own potential for healing, but none of them have the potential for healing like ayahuasca does. That, to me, is the true medicine. My ceremony was, like I said, it was all life-altering, and I felt like I had received, 10 years of tantric yoga in 7 hours. Uh-huh. When I got out of it, my eyes were so clear, and, you know, we had 52 people in our ceremony, and we all were just like, we were playing in the ocean, like, what did we just go through? Like, we just saw, like, a whole nother reality that exists. And how I explain ayahuasca, it's almost like when you take ayahuasca, you imagine that you're in a cave, a huge cavern that's lit up, and you can see the crystals and the beautiful sculptures for miles and miles. And then when your ceremony is over, it's like in that cave, someone shuts the lights off and hands you a flashlight. You know what's there, you just don't know where to even look for it. So that's how I explain ayahuasca to people.
Ah, that's really interesting. Really nice. Wow. Yeah, I'm going to have to check out ayahuasca priest and go to Mexico. Or I also have friends that do work with ayahuasca, and they have shaman teachers from Peru also. And also, I think, what's another place? I think Ecuador also. And they actually do come here, and sometimes there's ceremonies here. I've seen ceremonies done here. I have a friend, they have acreage of land out here. It's Northern California, and people have acreage out here. And they have what they did was they had a yurt. They put a Mongolian yurt, Mongolian-style yurt up, and they did the whole ceremony in there. Ayahuasca family. Yeah, I think they were from Ecuador. So it was a family. It was a grandfather, grandmother, and I guess their son. It was a shaman, this shaman dude, guy, and it was like 20, 30 people there. 20 people,
wow.
I guess. Yeah, it was really
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's
I have
great.
Friends that know some teachers, but like, I'm really planning to do this in the future, but I want to for sure, just want to do it with a shaman and not on my own or anything like that,
Well, hey, I don't know when you're planning on it, and it might take me a couple of years to get my retreat, but I definitely think that I'm going to do a sacred job, I would like to say, at administering this medicine to people. I really care about people's psyche, and I know that from childhood we go through traumas that end up hurting us in our adulthood life. One of the lessons that I got out of ayahuasca was how violent my inner voice was, and how bad I treated myself, and I could hear my inner voice. It became much louder than it normally is, and I was able to kind of practice during my ceremony and be like, okay, hold on, let's try that in a more nurturing way. But, this is the medicine that will really, bring people out of what they think life is. One of the biggest lessons I got out of ayahuasca was how beautiful the human experience really is, and that it should not, this experience should not be wasted. And
right.
I want this for everybody. If I can't heal everybody, obviously. I can't administer the medicine to people who aren't ready for it. But for the people who are, I want them to be healed. I want this healing in the world, because we cannot achieve anarchy. We cannot achieve true anarchy until we discover inner peace.
I think the same thing. Until we discover it, exactly. And then we can really let go of trying to control our neighbors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it starts, it's an inner journey. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got a really big lesson in go ahead, Lauren.
Go ahead.
I got a really big lesson in coercion during my ayahuasca ceremony. So I took 3.5 cups, and that was a lot. A lot of people stopped at 1 or 2. So I was very, very deep in a meditation. And somebody said, I was looking out at the ocean, 28 floors above the ocean in Acapulco. It was the most beautiful thing I could have done, because the ocean was black. It was at night. And so I was seeing visions through the ocean. The black ocean. And some guy came and sat next to me, and he had only taken like 1 cup, and he started to talk to me, and he said, how are you doing? And I just looked at him, and I was like, I can't even talk right now, because when you take ayahuasca, you can't talk to anybody else. You are talking so solely to yourself that you can't even pay attention to anything else. So that was where I was. And he's turning, and he's like, so how was it? And I'm like, I'm still in it, dude. So I turn back, and all of a sudden I start, over the banana leaves and the chanting that my shaman, the beautiful chanting that my shaman was doing, all of a sudden I start to hear rock music playing out of a headphone or, you know, an iPod. And I'm looking around like, who in the hell is playing that? And I started to get really angry. And I turned, and it was him. And he's sitting here listening to rock music. And I wanted to say to him, I wanted to reach out and be like, can you please, like, turn that down or something? But something came over me and said, I could reach out to him and express my anger, ruin his time, ruin my time. Or I could let him just be who he is in his own little reality, let him be happy in it, and not let it affect my reality at all. And it was the best lesson in coercion I had ever gotten. That's what non-coercion is. That's letting somebody be free. And not let it affect your reality at all, because we are all on different stages of our evolution. So you to judge somebody for doing something, you know, this is out of self-control, you know. And somebody actually did say to him, somebody who was deep in it, he turned to this guy who was playing his music and he goes, are you here or are you over there? And he was trying to get out, like, are you in this dimension or are you in a different realm? Because he started to get pissy with this guy. But I didn't say anything because I just wanted this guy to live in his own freedom and do what he needed to do in that time. So it was a great lesson in coercion.
Oh, wow, that's really good. That's how I look at it, too. It's like a neighbor can be annoying by dressing weird, right? Or doing some weird stuff or you know, it's just odd to the person. The freedom, that's how I say it too, like the freedom actually starts within. We work within our own selves. We have to worry about how we can free our minds, how we can be free from this botheration ourselves, and that way we can just keep doing what we want to do and not worry about the other person that keeps us from doing what we want to do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's an inner journey. So it's like once we let go and worrying about things outside ourselves, we can actually move forward a little better, you know, all of us as individuals, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So nice. That's a good one. I like that one. That's a good little interesting story there.
You know, ayahuasca will show you things, you know, if you ask questions. And see, the thing is with ayahuasca, compared to other psychedelics, I believe that our mind is an eternal library. Everything that we need to know, everything that is accessible to knowledge is in our heads, in our own minds. And I believe that psychedelics are the keys that open the doors to our mind's eternal library. I think that ayahuasca, in particular, is a master key to unlocking your psyche. And so when you open these doors, you find like these little pieces of yourself. Like, oh my gosh! You know, now then you can change things that way. You know, you can change the way that your brain actually deals with situations in life because you have a better understanding of yourself. And that's why I think ayahuasca is honestly the best medicine. And it's not only for your mind; it literally cures cancer too. There's a book. It's called Black Smoke, and it's about this woman who went to, I think it was Colombia or Costa Rica, and a shaman came up to her and said, you have black smoke in your heart. You need to let me heal you. And she said, no. And she went back to the United States, and a couple of weeks later, she was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. She took this as a sign and sought out that shaman. Well, you know, when he healed her, but he did some intense things to her, and this is where I say, like, shamans will put you kind of through hell. It's not always a fun journey, you know. It's a big, big journey, and it's a big, big job. And so he rode her down the river after dehydrating her. She hadn't even taken ayahuasca yet. Rode her down the Amazon River, waved at her goodbye, buried her in the sand up to her head, and left her for the night. And crab spiders crawled all over her head, and she was so weak she couldn't do anything about it. But it was a lesson in letting go. And then it was the ayahuasca. He started to administer her ayahuasca. After, I don't remember specifically how many months it was, but she was completely cured of her cancer. And now I know another person who I actually know through online, what we've been talking. Her name is Andrea, and she went to go get cured with ayahuasca. She had cancer, and after she did her ceremony, she was completely cured of her cancer.
Wow, that is interesting.
Yeah.
There's some chemical in there that's doing that, right? Or something in the plant, in the mixture in there.
It has
that's
to do
it.
With
it's
the
a
mixture.
Good medicine.
Oh, it is. It's an amazing. It has to do with the mixture. It has to do with the certain types of foods that you cannot eat while you're on an MAOI inhibitor. So the way that ayahuasca is brewed, it's with now I kind of want to look it up because I totally forgot the name because it's long. But there is a leaf that contains the DMT, and then there is the vine. And the vine I actually have around my neck, that's the MAOI inhibitor. And so we have, in our stomachs, we have MAOAs. They break down things like things that would normally be toxic to us, like alcohol or cheese or meat. And the MAOAs take that before they hit your digestive system and break it down. The problem with this, though, is that when you ingest DMT, it breaks the DMT down before it hits your bloodstream. So the MAOI inhibitor, the reason why ayahuasca is so powerful is because of that MAOI inhibitor. When you drink the ayahuasca, it settles the MAOAs and MAOBs in your stomach, so the DMT is allowed to be digested with your into your blood, absorbed into your bloodstream, and
oh,
that's why you get the trip for 12 hours, but you cannot eat certain foods beforehand because those MAOAs are completely sustained. They're oppressed. So you can really harm yourself by taking opiates or antidepressants or any kind of psychiatric medicine. Ayahuasca is a very jealous root. She wants you all to herself. And if she feels anything inside of you, she will purge. That's
right.
For sure.
Wow. Wow. This is an interesting plant teacher, basically.
Oh, yeah. She definitely is. There's something about, and I do say her because, and you'll hear this from everybody who takes her, basically, that it is a purely female energy. It's purely it's the mother. It's a motherly energy. It's the mother that you wish you had as a child, you know. And I can't speak for everybody's mother, but there's something very nurturing and divine about this motherly, nurturing, beautiful, feminine energy that you get from ayahuasca. I felt so taken care of. But, you know, one of the biggest things... I'm sorry, I'm kind of going on a rampage here because I'm so passionate about this medicine.
That's good.
One of the things that my shaman taught us before we went into the ceremony is that ayahuasca is like a ginormous wave. And if you take ayahuasca, never resist. If you resist a wave, what happens? You get drug across the ocean floor. But if you go with the wave, she will eventually bring you up. So always go with it because she's got so many lessons. But, you know, and I never resisted through the entire ceremony. I felt like I had complete control. Even when I got deep, I just breathed myself out of certain you know, depths. But she always brought me up safe. And so, you know, always go with the flow, like I said before.
Yeah. It's pretty, wow. I'm going to really think about doing this myself for sure. This has been interesting. I've also been hearing these things from other people also. Yeah, this is, so that's really good. I'm going to get that book that you mentioned also called Black Smoke and stuff.
It's a great book. It's a wonderful book. She actually is now, this woman goes around with her shaman and preaches, preaches the therapeutic properties of ayahuasca.
Wow. How many shamans do you go see? Like, do you have one shaman, two shamans?
And you know what? It's so funny that I've taken such a passion because I've only had one ceremony, and it was with a shaman that came to Anarchapoco last year. I'm planning on meeting many shamans because I want to gain as much knowledge as I possibly can, but that journey doesn't start until next year for me.
Ah, that kind of got you going on the ayahuasca. That's opened your eyes a bunch then because you're passionate about it.
My heart dances when I talk about ayahuasca. It's like my favorite thing to talk about. I try to express it with as many people as I possibly can.
Yeah, nice. Nice. What was it? I think that's I don't even know what to ask now. What other?
Lauren, is she still here? There she is.
I'm so high. I'm over here enjoying it over here, and I'm sitting here. You have no idea. This is wow.
Should we, Lauren, is there callers coming in, maybe? You think callers want to ask questions and stuff like that?
Yeah. If I have to pull up the dashboard. Hold on, because I'm so. Well, Macy, when do you plan to come on? Come on out to.
To a narco pit.
How long do you plan to stay out there, or do you plan on moving there like forever? You know.
I'm going to be in Acapulco. I don't know if that's the right move for me. So I feel like it is, but I'm only going to be there for 4 months to test the waters and to make sure that that's where I want to stay. But I'm going to be going to Peru in the summertime to practice shamanism. And then, you know, I'm not really sure where I'll be after that. I guess. I'm just going to follow my intuition on that one.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. So you'll be there for 4 months.
I'm sorry, what?
So it'll be just 4 months you'll be living there, basically.
In Acapulco, yeah. I'll be living there from January till May, and then I could extend my stay. I probably will. I really enjoy Acapulco, and I think that that's the right move for me, but I want to make sure that it's the right move. So I'm trying to... You know, I'm trying to make sure that I'm mature about this and I know what I'm getting myself into.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is freedom. So freedom and good produce.
So how did you link yourself with people that were over in Peru? Is it kind of like a connection where, you know, a lot of people will go to Tibet to purge off of heroin? You know, and everybody has a link to, you know, different areas. Now, where do you plan on going in Peru itself?
I'm not actually sure yet. I have a bunch of different options, and I want to make sure that it's with a pure healer. There are dangers with going to visit a shaman. Some of them are called sorcerers, When you become a shaman, you are practicing self-control, because what the indigenous people believe is that human beings, and I have to agree in a sense, human beings have an ego and they want to, you know, potentially hurt others, whether it be mentally, emotionally, or even physically, and it's through self-control that you learn how to heal, You have to learn this form of self-control. It involves abstinence. It involves a diet, a very strict diet where you're not allowed to eat salt or anything that has flavoring, because food is not supposed to be ingested as a pleasure. Food is for nutrients only. And that going on this diet helps you respect the plant more. There are so many things that you have to do to gain this self-control. You know, as human beings, we're kind of loose cannons sometimes. And it's not our fault. We just have an ego, you know, and you know, based on certain situations, things that trigger us, we can literally, you know, we can do something out of ego instead of out of love. What shamanism is learning how to turn the other cheek in a sense. Not let those things control you and have an extreme amount of self-control. I'm taking this very carefully, and I'm going to choose the shaman that I feel is the best to help me gain that strength of self-control.
Right.
Yeah, self-control.
I think that's crucial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's
Self-control with me seems to be an issue for.
It is for a lot of people. It is for me, too. I get angry. I get angry, and I react out of my anger, and I cause damage that way. And, you know, that's something that I want to learn how to control.
I feel you. I get angry, and then I'll get into this weird place where, like, I'll just start bugging out. Like, my mind starts going crazy. I start thinking crazy things, and then I start acting out because I can't take it much longer. Because, like, sometimes my mind's my worst enemy. So
yeah.
I can fight it.
Yes, and that's okay. And that's kind of what I'm trying to eliminate out of my life, and to have that self-control. And it's not an easy journey. Let's just say that.
No, we
are human beings. So
it's like an abusive female running back to her, drunk abusive husband. It was like that for me, like the mentality wise. Like, I'm fine, and then I'll go back into that crazy mode. Then I'll be fine, sailing along, the ocean fine, and then all of a sudden, like, I'll be sitting there pondering, and then my mind will start bugging out. That is such a problem for me.
Yep, and you know, that's just things that we have to learn as human beings. You know, we have to find the I had somebody explain to me who had taken peyote, and he and I started talking about our experiences with peyote and ayahuasca, and he told me, life is like climbing a mountain. And for a short while, you have to go with your parents and learn the tips and tricks to climb this mountain from your parents. And some of our parents didn't give us the right tools to climb this mountain properly. So we have to go and find out easier ways to climb this mountain, whether it be a walking stick or learning how to direct ourselves through the stars or see if it's animal tracks. And, the path gets easier the more tools that we learn and the more lessons that we learn. And eventually you get to sit down for lunch and you get to look back and you get to see how far you climbed on the mountain. But eventually the lunch break ends and you continue to climb up that mountain, finding more tools for your survival to make it easier. And you know, I really took a lesson from that story that analogy, because I think life is just learning how to find those tools to bring yourself inner peace.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that inner peace is very crucial. And then having that tolerance to learn how your mind is working. And also,
like fighting the little aspects of your archon consciousness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why
it's not even fighting extrovertly. You're fighting introvertly as well as these lessons that are being shown to you. So it's kind of like battling. Yeah, it's kind of battling like each archon. Depends on how strong of a level you think it is on that subconscious itself. So, when I trip, I don't even want to be around people. Like, I'll go hide somewhere and just, like, sit there and just let my mind just open up, like, just suction and go through all kinds of hell and go through all kinds of, like amazing moments. But it's almost like mirroring. I'm mirroring the aspects of myself that I don't like. That I see, you know what I mean? I might see in another person. The reason why I don't like it is because I harbor it. There's a lot there's a lot of intense knowledge that a lot of this does for you. You know, I think I went through the loop in some aspect.
You know, and I think one of the things that we have a hard time as human beings to do is facing ourselves. And, I think... especially people who are extremely emotionally unattached, they have an extremely hard time facing themselves. But for the people who are emotionally, there, who are empathetic, I think it is still very hard to face ourselves, but in the end we know that it's better because we all have demons. We are all on our own evolution. Like I said, we are all on a different path. And we have to stop being so hard on ourselves about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't like to fight their ego, the negative part of their ego.
No, they want to be reassured.
I don't even care if like if I met like the coolest person, but if he had an ugly like one of his ugly egos, it just makes them all ugly. But I think a lot of people that sit there and but I can see it in people. So where other people can't see it, you know, they kind of glide in and just I don't know. But so there's certain aspects of people that I see, and I hope I don't have. And then,
well, they, and that's what they say. One of the biggest things that they say is that if you see something in another individual, it is a reflection of you. If you see beauty in something, it is you're reflecting the beauty of you. So I think that we have both of those qualities to see bad and good. But, you know, something that I'm really empathetic about is those people that I see with the ego. They are working, you know, we are all trying our best. And I try to stay empathetic with the people who have, you know, even ugly egos. I still feel
it's
empathy.
The ugly egos are the worst. They're the abusive ones, though.
You know what? I still, you know, think that we are all on our own path of evolution, and we're all going through. So I still hold empathy for the abusers or the people, because it shows me that they are hurting deeply inside. And,
they're hurting.
Yeah.
It's like some kind of like sometimes when I think of when people are emotionally kind of detached like that, I feel like they're scared of something or scared to feel because of something in the past happened to them. I think, you know, so they get emotionally detached and they're kind of like odd. So it's like,
always like a dangerous emotional attachment. It's a dangerous emotional attachment when the bad egos come in.
Oh,
we
you're
all
talking
know
about
in my aspect, in my case, all about that.
There's dangerous people too. Yeah, there's dangerous people too. But you can still find like some good feeling for them.
You said dangerous ones because you're taking it from me because it's crazy. Oh my god.
There's some crazy out there.
But you know what? You don't have to tolerate them. You don't have to tolerate them.
You
can feel empathetic with them and not have to tolerate them. You know, you get them out of your life then. And I think that's like the you know, you can't heal any, you know, you can't force anybody to heal themselves. You can open the door, it's not guaranteed they're going to walk through it, but you can walk through that door and say adios, you know.
What would you do if you've been waiting for that person to walk through that door because they claim they want to walk through that door so bad, but it's taking over 2 years and they don't want to walk through the door?
You know what? I saw a really funny meme. I saw a really funny meme about like how people sometimes, you know, they tell you they want to change and then they don't. Like I said, you can't force anybody to walk through a door, but it was a sign at Target and it said was $6.99, now $6.99. If they're not going to change, just walk away. You know, just walk out.
Right.
And I laughed so hard because I thought, you know, that is so perfect. You know, to explain somebody who, you know, you've opened the door for, you're waiting for, you know, who is extremely hurting on the inside. Now, they might come after you and say, you know, terrible things to you, but really that's a reflection of themselves and how violent their inner voice is. So I've learned to be really empathetic with these people but at the same time, I have enough self-respect to not tolerate it. So I just walk away. You know, there's no violence on my end. I don't flip out. I don't get defensive. I don't even give them my time of day. I don't reply. I don't give them attention. I just walk away. And they can deal with their healing on their own. When they want to change, they will.
Yeah, that's how I look at it too. There's only so much you can do. You know, you wait for a moment and then it's like, okay, this is not going in the right direction. And I got to help myself at it. And you're thinking you're still on your own journey too. If this person is going to stay behind, and then it's going to go way more behind because I'm trying to move forward. Oh, I got to go.
Nobody else is on the same level.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I meant, like the level, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
And you still find like compassion for them because, like how Macy, how you were saying, like we're on a different level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're all
you don't have
path.
To like be. Yeah, we don't have to have a vendetta or anything, like, you know. When you have compassion, you can let go, and then you don't really have to associate, you know, the same
exactly.
time.
So what kind of level would you determine, Ty, is somebody who was on the bad ego who wanted to, like, dungeon you, you know? Is that, like,
Well, the situation you were in, that was kind of dungeon-style situation. Or... how could I calculate that? I don't know. I mean, you just have to see how the person is, you know. That's, you know, the person.
But how can somebody manipulate so bad and put you in a mental prison and then work on, once they have you in the mental prison, they get you in the physical prison?
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's really interesting. That's a tricky one because... it's sometimes hard to tell people too that are in a mental prison, you know, because their attachment, because of that attachment, and also because mm-hmm. they keep believing maybe that they're going to change and all these things. If that's kind of a, you know, that's a mental prison. But sometimes, I don't know.
That's a really good way of putting. That's really really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
You know, the attachment. Yeah.
Right.
Attachment is the reason for all of our suffering, they said.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
but
a,
there
is.
Can be like healthy attachment and then there's bad attachment.
There's actually healthy attachment too. Like my teacher, I have a teacher, like, you know, a tantric teacher, and he also mentioned, like, he goes, there's detachment and then there's attachment. And then he goes, there's no detachment and there's no attachment. So what he was saying, that there's a difference between healthy attachment and then an unhealthy attachment, just like how Lauren was saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's nothing wrong with attachment. It just depends what kind of attachment you have, I guess. You know,
real bad one.
Yeah, and that's real bad attachments. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what were you
going to
say about attachment?
Oh, who? Me?
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to an attachment, it's okay to have an attachment. It's okay to love. But, like, for instance, exercising. I love to work out. It's one of my favorite things to do in the entire world. I'm in the gym all the time. But, you know, when it would become unhealthy is if, you know, I never, you know, got out of the gym or, you know, I started to lose a lot of weight, you know, being completely addicted to it. So there, you know, even with healthy things, there can, you know, get a point to where it's unhealthy. So it's everything in moderation, And, you know, a thing about like happiness, like unhealthy attachment comes from attaching yourself to a human being out of lust. And one of the things they say about happiness and actual freedom is that, you know, when you have freedom in yourself, when you've learned to live alone, when you've learned to find solitude in being alone and being your own best friend, you are able to go out and love with all intensity because you don't judge the other person. You don't try to change them. You let them do whatever, you know, you want. And you aren't going to, if they leave, it won't affect you because they are not the form of your happiness. They are not the source of your happiness. You are the source of your happiness. So you have to find a level of balance when it comes to attachment. You have to you have to be centered. And you know, that's something that I'm just recently learning. So I'm trying to practice as much as I possibly can. So
I've come to some type of closure in myself when I start reading about like narcissistic personality, because it gives you the phases in which they work and manipulate, and you're just like, oh my god, I was a victim of that, you know. You, like each and every symptom of their psychology is so on point, it's scary.
Oh yeah. Well, that was that one situation you're in. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting.
So I have something to talk about with this. It was a beautiful theory that my friend came up with when I was in Mexico. I was explaining to him how there's this thing called the ascension process, and it started in 2000. The stars started to align all differently. People started to lose their minds. The amount of people who were being diagnosed with bipolar disorder rose from 2000 to 2010, 42%. People start to lose their mind, but really, it has to do with like what the Mayans were talking about. It wasn't the end of the world; it was the beginning of a new age, and we are evolving. We are going from Homo sapien to Homo luminous, and I know how crazy this sounds, but this is this is a theory I heard, and I was explaining it to a friend, and he said, and get me if you think that this is an interesting theory. When a species evolves, the branching, the species branches off to two different sides. The first species that existed, whenever they feel threatened by a new species that has come along, they are threatened and they fight against it. So when you think about the government, you think about these people in power, when they say, oh, they want more money, more power, well, that doesn't really make sense. Like, on a fundamental level, that really doesn't make any, it kind of explains it, but it doesn't. When you have sex, you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to go procreate. You're thinking, yes, this feels really good, right? Because, but genetically, you're thinking, I want to procreate. Now, if let's say the sociopaths and the narcissists and the people who run the world, they are the original species. And the anarchists, let's say this is on a genetic level of awakening, the anarchists are kind of going off and doing their own thing. Well, the leaders of the other species, they're going to feel threatened, which to me explains on a genetic level why there's so much crazy shit going on right now.
That's very true. It was like reading out this scenario where they were talking about the Ajiji that actually rebelled. They're the anarchists, and the sick ones are the other ones, like the narcissists and everything.
Genetically, there's
something wrong with them.
But do you think it might be, and this is just a crazy theory, I don't have any evidence to back this up, but do you think this is genetic, that maybe the reason why there's so much chaos and war and whatnot, and NSA, and this and that, I think that it might be on a genetic level, and I don't even know if they subconsciously or consciously know that they're doing it. It might be completely on a subconscious level.
That's really interesting.
Isn't that a cool theory?
Macy, they think we're the problem. They're the wild ones, and we're the sick ones.
No, but guess what? Survival of the fittest. And that's what it comes down to. And we are the fittest. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think the same thing, too. I think I also have these thoughts, too. And the whole 2012 thing, that was not even the end. I knew this, and I was even telling people this at the time. It was coming around, basically. I go, no, it's just evolution. And I also read other astrological things, like from Vedic astrology, and they have dates going up to like 2034 or 36, saying how.
Can you smoke outside and not in the garage?
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I thought you were saying something to me for a moment, because I smoke or something. But what's it called? That we're evolving, and also I get into other astrological stuff, like Vedic astrology and stuff like that. And I have a personal astrologer friend too. They also have dates where the whole thing kind of starts to shift by 2012-13, but it keeps going. And then in 2020s, another thing happens, and then I guess there's another date where in Vedic astrology where it lands in 2034 or 2036, where things are much better.
How do you compete with the narcissists who believe they are correct and they are right, and there's a majority of them are running around in the world, and they think that we're the wrong ones, like we're their enemy, but we only want peace with them. So, like, there has to be a DNA strand somewhere where one is, like, only, even if you look at it parably by biblically, where they said there's one of a serpentine line, and then there was one that was of a righteous line.
I don't know how to answer that.
Am I so high that I'm just off in a whole other dimension right now?
Oh, no, you're mixing, I think, two things probably, or two. But you're talking from
no,
the... You're talking,
no,
you're talking
no,
from the...
like people that aren't awake. Like, people that aren't awake, like, they don't have the lamp oil. Or people who aren't awake who are, like, who have a different, I think, genetic makeup. Like, the people who, like, don't have functioning limbic-type brains, the narcissistic or the sociopathic-type personality. These are most of the people that are running around in the world. And we can differentiate and we can see them now for what they are. But they can see us, too, and they think that we're the threat.
Oh, yeah. I think also they're like an older generation, too. Like, I think it'll take time.
No, there are generations. No, there are ages, too. No, this is not just...
I don't know what our future is. I don't have a crystal ball to explain what we're going to be going through. But what I do know is that we are going through a conscious shift. There is an awakening of consciousness. When I learned about the ascension process, which is basically, you know, I was 21, so it was in 2011. And it completely altered my life. But when I looked it up online, the ascension process, what are we going through? There were no websites to be brought up. The only thing that was brought up, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Now you look up the ascension process and there are a million pages. So that's what kind of, because I was in the beginning of the
awakening. Age of Aquarius.
Yeah, that's how I see it.
That's when the veil starts peeling back. Yeah, in Norse mythology, they believe that that's when the veil start peeling back.
Yep, and this is,
you know,
this is
so
the time.
Even
this
I think
happening.
Biblically they talk about the wheat and the tares. The righteous and the unrighteous are separated. And I can't tell you more of a separation I feel from, like, the majority of society.
Yep. We're definitely, the veils are unthinning. And honestly, like, you know, with the Bernie Sanders supporters, they saw how they were screwed over in the election process, you know, like they know. And so that was maybe their first step to awakening. I have confidence that humanity has beautiful things to endure in the future. I think that there's beautiful things. Can I say for sure? No, I think that there's definitely going to be war. There's going to be chaos. But, you know, where we put our energy is where, how we're going to get through this. If we are in fear constantly of these leaders in power, the people who are in power, we're not going to get anywhere. We're just going to stick in our own fear. They're gonna win. But if we continue to move forward, continue to heal the world, I think that's the way that we're gonna make it. If we continue to open people's eyes, not force anybody to open their eyes, but, you know, put the little things that we need to put down. And hey, here's some food. Here's a glass of water. You can drink it if you want, but you don't have to. Yeah. But I think that everybody is waking up at their own pace right now.
Yeah, I even have, like, on the social networks on my friends list.
How do you explain the mean parasitic ones that claim to be enlightened and awake, but they're still very diseased in the mind,
Those guys are going to, the way I look at it, those guys will just slowly, surely disappear. Basically, they're for sure parasitic, but if we keep moving forward, how I look at it, it's like we keep moving forward individually. They'll do it their way.
Respect my authority.
Yep.
Respect my authority.
My authority, or so.
Yeah, my authority. That's me. Like, we're like barbarians or something.
I was gonna say too. I remember, since you mentioned Sanders, I have a few friends that were Sanders, following Sanders. That, you know, and when that happened, and they got all turned off, I have at least two Sanders friends that are thinking about agorism, saying there's no hope and we can't even ask them for anything. You know what I'm saying? So they're like, I think I'm going to have to take up this agorism thing. I got to check it out. And then I have one friend that's fully like already just liking the being a voluntarist. It's like fully into it. But I don't know if they're agorists, but that's like at least three Sanders people that got really just shifted their thinking because of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I've seen people go full status pure anarchism.
Oh man, there's certain things out there that try to create a little manipulation to try to keep the state empowered, you know, like the right wing side right now, they're really getting people sucked into empowering the state. It's really heavy. Like people are having too much trust and this and that. I go, how do you trust anything? And it's like you're getting sucked back into the state with some people. You know, it's like, wow. I go, we're supposed to keep going the other direction still, like keep moving forward, not go back, you know. But there's a certain thing out there that's still kind of weird. But everybody's shifting.
It's a cosmic lesson. I think that we are the universe smart enough to observe itself. I think that we are all one, and I think that we are playing a game, essentially, with ourselves. And we are going back to our source. I feel like I know this for a fact. I've seen it in my ayahuasca ceremony. I'm not really sure why I feel this way, but I definitely believe that we have a purpose. You know, I think that we are miracles made out of particles, and we have potential to do great things. And I think it's just taken us a while to evolve. So.
Yeah. I look at it as it can take generational too, like the people that are having kids now, they're teaching their kids about non-aggression, non-coercion, you know what I'm saying? And so I also look at it like it takes time because it starts with us and then it spreads, you know, people start shifting and then all of us, like we start having, there's people that have kids and then them teaching their kids, it's like a big thing. Because that's another generation, and they're spreading stuff out, and people are already getting turned off by the system as it is. So I'm kind of optimistic, but I see it taking time, basically, at the same time. But I'm very optimistic about things getting better.
Exactly, and that's why I truly and honestly do not believe that we can just pull the rug from people's feet and abolish government right away. We need to evolve. We need to evolve, and we have to find inner peace, and that has to be with everybody on planet Earth. We have to find that inner peace first, and we can't rush it. We cannot rush this. So it has to be done in the way that the universe is kind of planning it to be done or the way that it's working out. We can't just pull the rug out of people's, out of people's feet or under people's feet. We can't do that because that's going to ultimately cause the chaos that we don't want in the world.
Yeah, because they got into it too fast, they jumped the train, and then I see some anarchists that are new, like barely from a year ago, like they get into anarchism and then they go back into statism, going for Trump or something because they haven't fully understood the situation yet or the principles. So it's like they're only reacting out of fear. Or this and that, the war, like, you know, it's like, wow, really? I go, what about, you know, your principles, you? Even if you think you're going to die or whatever, how do you want to die, bro? I mean, come on, the weakness of the heart, like, I really, that's why I even say, like how you say, like, anarchism starts within. You know, you have to be strong-hearted. You know, you can't fear birth. You can't fear death. You can't fear life. You can't fear love. You know, people are detached emotionally because they fear love, maybe, or they fear because of the past. This fear is what keeps us holding back, you know, this fear. And that's why people keep reverting to what they're doing because they're reacting out of that fear that brain does to them or what the system feeds the brain, and they don't even know they're getting sucked in, you know, like, you know. But, yeah, it's it's just the anarchism starts within. It's just how it goes, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's already found within the heart.
Well, I always think you have to have internal anarchy in order to exert and live externally anarchy. So it's definitely a spiritual walk. I consider my road to anarchism extremely spiritual. So, you know, a lot of people just come across and stumble it. I don't think they can see. They love it and like it, but I don't think they can honestly embrace it. Like, I live anarchy, so it's kind of... there's a lot of sacrifices, but there's it's a pretty righteous road, you know. I wouldn't go back. I don't think I could ever go back.
Oh, now
on that other side of the mirror, you know.
Yeah, now I know what I was going to get to too. So what I was saying, they get into it so fast, they jump back into statums of without understanding how they got back into that, right? Because the thing is, I don't know if it's going to match what I'm saying, but there's an analogy saying you can't feed a baby adult food because he can't chew it. They can't chew it. They can't digest that food. It's the body, you know what I'm saying? There's no teeth. It's just gums. So you have to feed the baby food. So little by little, but you're actually giving food and then you're nourishing that person. So as that person, as you're giving baby food and you say, like, when you're talking to somebody, you're talking to them in such a pace that they're embracing the principles little by little because you talk to them in that pace compared to, like, jumping the gun sometimes. People that jump the gun, I see them revert a bunch, dude. Like, wow. Like, the past year. I go, whoa, something went wrong here. You know, I think it's the way that we bring down the message, maybe, or people are... Or it's from the other side, they're just jumping a train of like, oh, this is going on right now, and they're just jumping the train without understanding, so they kind of think they're doing the right thing or something, promoting certain things, you know what I'm saying? The way I look at it is like you give the baby food, and it nourishes them, and they can't go backwards. When you're giving them baby food, you're going to see those people cannot go backwards. Has a whole different effect. So, and then after the baby's growing, it's eating freaking adult food. So now it's in full growth. It's like, that's how I, you know, look at it too. Like, I like to give people time. I like to talk to people where at the space they're in, you know. That's why I have a bunch of friends on my friends list on social networks, like Sanders people, Trump, whatever. Libertarians. I talk to a lot of libertarians. And it's easy to talk to them because they're more so open to liberty. And you can see them little by little getting into it. I have Sanders people, two Sanders friends that got straight into wanting to know about agorism because the system made them do that. They got burnt out by burning.
Exactly.
You know, but that helps too. Yeah, that helps too. But that's how I look at it. Like the baby can only eat baby food and you nourish it. And the nourishing is what makes them not turn back. And this is a concept that a lot of people might not see too. Yeah.
True. I definitely agree with that. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. This is my experience because I've been working with this, and you know, even I experienced this during the Ron Paul times. You know, I've been an anarchist for a long time, like about 17 years. You know, the way I even found out about Ron Paul was through a mutualist friend of mine. He's a mutualist anarchist, and through that experience, I started learning how to understand and how to connect with people, and bring them fully into the concept of liberty, non-aggression, and to have them there 100%, but not turning back. And I've seen the growth. And then I see people that jumped a train like the past year or two, that a lot of those ones I seen reverted. So I go, what's really going on? So that's why I start thinking like this, because I actually experienced this myself. I've been an anarchist for so long. So I've seen this whole process going through. So it's really, it was an interesting experience for me. It was a learning lesson for me. And I do what I do. Some people doubt me because they don't understand how I'm voicing things. But, you know, it's just the way I work with people and the way I work with my friends. I never had a problem. And everybody loves liberty that I talk to, you know, and they keep get more into it, you know.
And I think, honestly, like, the reason why they revert back to the way they were is because they have a form of mental slavery that they haven't worked through yet. And so, you know, real freedom, you know, people preach liberty all the time, but, you know, you have to find liberty in your own head. And you know what? Unblocking your own mental slavery is quite possibly the most challenging thing to do, the most challenging thing you'll ever have to do in your life. Because it involves you having to face yourself to get over your cognitive dissonance. And I think a lot of the libertarians, as much as they would like to say they believe, and they do, you know, we were all born anarchists, but we all have things that have happened in our life. We've been, you know, some of us have gone, most of us, the majority of us have gone to government schools. We've had authoritarian parents. We've learned how to be enslaved. And that's the comfortable place. It's like that one quote about, oh, you know, this bird, you know, there's a bird in a cage. And it's like, well, you know, I've been put in this, and now the cats won't get to me and this and that. But now you can't fly. And I think that's the reason why a lot of these people have gone back to supporting the system, because they haven't broken the system in their own mind yet.
Right, exactly. That's exact truth. Maybe I'm just assuming because of how he speaks so strongly, and then you see it a few months later to get in a certain way.
it's easy to speak. Honestly, it is easy to speak strongly, but actions and actually following through with what you want, you know, what you want. When you challenge yourself that way, you have to challenge your mind. Like, if you believe in freedom, okay, that's great. But now you have to challenge yourself, or you're never going to actually be free, and you're never going to know what true freedom really is. It starts with your mind first, and then we can work our way into no government. But yes, no, there have been a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people on my friends list that support Trump. And actually, because I talk so strongly about Clinton, because Trump is just an egotistical ass to me. I think, honestly, like, he is a carnival.
He definitely needs some ayahuasca.
But, you know, he definitely needs some ayahuasca. But the thing is, like, I see a lot of people who are like, oh, my God, Trump's the devil. You know what? I don't side with it. I'm not voting. I'm not saying that I'm political in any way or shape or form. But I'd much rather watch the circus with Trump than to watch psychopath Hillary, who is clinically what I would assume is a psychopath. Yeah. It's obvious.
Yeah,
Watching her try to connect with an audience is seriously the most entertaining thing I have ever seen in my life, because to me, she has no soul. But, you know.
She is a reptile. I'm telling you, she's not even human. That woman cannot be human.
I don't know what truth is anymore. That could be, you know what, nothing's impossible. I'm not saying I think that for sure, but it could quite possibly be. Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I would
things are here, you know.
To tell you the truth, I would much rather see Trump in office. I don't know. You know, compared to Hillary, okay? not promoting either, just like you said.
Yeah.
Not promoting. The reason why I would love to see him there, because I don't know, I think it'll be like a show, because he's going to keep talking the same, doing the weird things, but I also want to see how everything, I also want people to see how everything is still going to fuck up, because you can't really control things. You know what I'm saying?
You know,
when you control things, there's a lot of problems.
This is the most important and crucial point of the ascension process. They say, you know, it has been said that 2017 is the year that most people are awake. And so whatever this election is, you can't worry about who's going to get elected, because either way, it's going to wake up a lot of people. And so that's my main focus on this election cycle.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it's optimistic.
Good.
That's how I look at it, too.
Yeah,
I think it's going to wake up a lot of people. It doesn't matter who's in also, you know. But I think it'd just be really fun if when Trump is in there, and I think it'd be really weird, too, at the same time. But not fun in a good way. I mean, fun meaning, like, he's just weird. He acts funny. He talks funny. I mean, George Bush was funny. I mean, he made up a lot of words as he talked, and you know, all these things. It's just comedic to me in a way, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But it'll be really interesting. It'll be really interesting when he's in office, because when he's in there, I mean, it's going to be crazy. He wants to, you know, extend the Patriot Act. And expand the Patriot Act. He says that people shouldn't have internet freedom. He says that should be very limited.
I know.
Honestly, this is the reason why I'm leaving. So,
yeah.
This is, I'm out of here. I don't even care anymore. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye, America. Adios.
I'm just roaming around the prison sectors right now, outlawing it. Quite intense for me.
Nomadic outlaw.
I like being a nomad for some reason. I don't like to be set in one area because I don't like people. So,
love people.
I like going around the prison sectors and like meeting all the other anarchists, because you can sit and show with an anarchist.
Yeah.
And you feel very calm. But as soon as you go out into society, my anxiety levels want to explode.
See, and this is something that I'm actually working on, because I have been spoiled for the last 2 years. I have been constantly surrounded by anarchists and people who are like-minded. I've had to go back into what I refer to as the Matrix. And I have done everything. You know, at the moment, while I'm saving money, I'm actually I'm working at a bar. And it's challenging in a sense, because I feel like I'm on a completely different level than a lot of these people, you know, and I'm in Wisconsin. It's where all the various sleep people are. But you know what I've taken into as my own responsibility, I have learned how to be empathetic with these people and talk to them in a way where they're curious as to what I know. And I've been doing a really good job about it. And honestly, it's because I've been focusing solely on genuine human connection. I believe that these people are asleep because of for a reason. They've been asleep because of the government, because of their families. It's not their fault that they have extreme cognitive dissonance. The only thing that I can do for these people is to be kind to them, be empathetic, and listen to their story, because that's the only way they're going to be open to our ideas anyway, is to have somebody who's empathetic, who's kind, who's confident in what they believe, and not only talks the talk, but walks the walk. And I've been doing a pretty good job, I would say, in inspiring people to try psychedelics, the ones who have been told that they lose their minds. I've been, I've been extremely empathetic with these people. And to form that genuine human connection, it's better than going on Facebook and starting a Facebook flame war that gets you nowhere and just ends up hurting the person and validates their thoughts even further. So,
oh, wow.
I think that the best thing that we can do is to try to connect with these people. This is the only way that they might wake up, is to be kind to. You know, people aren't kind to each other anymore, and it breaks my heart. And you know, I've had a closed heart for especially in the last 2 years, I've completely closed my heart chakra down. So the thing that I have been focusing on is my heart and opening my heart to anybody, and not necessarily tolerating people who don't deserve to be tolerated, but being empathetic with the people who need to have compassion towards them.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, 100%. We've gone past overtime, and I've meant to take a bunch of callers, and I'm sitting here going through reading, and it was a total cool interview, and we all were just, you know, gliding through and having a conversation, so a lot of people can go ahead and hit this podcast.
Well,
hey, go ahead and
re-watch. If anybody's listening who is trying to call, if they have questions for me, they can always PM me on Facebook. I try to answer as much as I possibly can. I can't always get back like within an hour, but I will try to get back to you within a couple days. So if you have questions, please just message me at Macy Tomlin, MaceyTomlin, and I will be sure to answer any questions that come through.
Oh,
Nice.
Yes, and I'm going to surely post this link up also on Anarchy Girl so people can go ahead and hear the interview that we had on tonight, which was absolutely awesome. Super stoked. Tons of valuable information, and we're going to get to meet a lot of these cool people in and out Anarchapoco. And, yeah, everybody's living free and living anarchy as far as I'm concerned. So it's absolutely awesome. So totally thank you for coming on, Macy, coming on the Anarchy Girl Show. I absolutely enjoyed it. I can't wait to see you in Mexico, and this was a very, very awesome, cool show. So thank you so much for coming on.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Did you have a good rest of your night?
Nice. You too.
Oh, you too. And total peace, love, and anarchy, everybody. We're all out.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Until next week on Anarchy Garage, I do believe we will have Jordan Page, and Jordan Page, I do believe, is on tour right now. So I think he's going to discuss the locations of that as well. Where he's on tour, what he's doing, it'll be a super awesome episode. And we have a couple other guests, surprise guests, that will be coming up this week, which is super awesome. And, this is the end of the Anarchy Girl Show. Tonight I'm in Colorado right now, broadcasting out of here. I'm probably going to go take a visit up to the Shining Hotel in Colorado, where the Stanley Hotel, where the movie The Shining was. I'm going to hit up to another cool spot. And, so I'm going to hit up various cool sites and post them on Facebook where I'm at and what I'm doing. And, then I'll be back in Houston. So we'll see how this journey's going. But until next Friday, peace out, everybody.
Peace.